Okay, so before we get going, I just wanted to state, obviously this is the first show from my new radio show, Diverse Verse, which is on Alphabet Radio. I'll put the link in the description for you to check out the show there, as well as lots of other great shows that we have on the station. Now, there were some musical tracks played in the radio show, right? But that's radio, so you can do that. And this is a podcast, and the logistics of playing music is different. It requires licensing and shit. So the musical tracks that were played in the radio show will be taken out. So if you hear, like, me talking about a song that's just played, you'll have to, like, use your imagination or, like, go to Spotify and play it, or you can go and listen to the on-demand radio version, which still includes them. But anyway, so I was just letting you know so it's not confusing and weird for you. And now, it will begin. As a cancelled but quotable drag queen once said, "You're right, babes. Welcome to Diverse Verse." This show, I kind of feel like it's like a magical mystery tour of luxury language. Yeah, I like that. We're going to be hearing from some amazing alphabet poets from all across our community. We've got some readings of poems, we have interviews coming up, and I think it's gonna be a real fun time, so stick around. My love for her was a natural, God-given state, sent from the clouds that surrounded sunrises that we'd often watch, our fingers finding each other in the camouflage of gentle grass, meeting in the muted mellow moments of quiet, where nobody could catch us, capturing each other in a kiss. She was bliss, with her in my arms and on my mind. The questions of my quest for fulfillment were finally forgotten, and I could exist, not divided, divine, and decidedly at peace, knowing that I was born to kiss her, full on the lips, as a lover. I tell you of her, not out of joy, dear reader, or for the heartbreak of denying you and me a happy ending. She is gone. I have spent 6 months moping in the meadow, swearing at the sunrise for not bringing her back when it visits, poring through page after page of this book she recommended. Of course it ended. Whether we die or simply drift apart, the gaze shall always be buried. I read The Well of Loneliness to see if I could find a way to win back her heart, but all I have is nonsensical notes and tear-stained cheeks. So I suppose I'll sail the ship alone. That was something I wrote called The Well of Loneliness, and it was kind of a journey through processing loss, I guess. I wrote a lot of things based on the same woman. She really did a number on me, you know what I mean? If you know, you know. And just so many poems. Very angst-ridden, you know. I wrote a song about her. It was really dramatic because I'm sitting there trying to write this song about losing her and everything. I swear to you, I couldn't make it longer than, like, I think it's about a minute and a half. I couldn't make it any longer. I physically couldn't. I was so emotional and overwhelmed. I was a mess. I'm still a mess. Being a mess is my brand, I feel, at that point. That and being an Aquarius. I'm very attached to my star sign. which sucks, because my boyfriend is a Capricorn, and he's a Capricorn, if you know what I mean. Like, he is very... He's not just down to earth, he's in the ground. He's like tunneling through into whatever happens to be in the middle of the earth. It's wild. So he does not really entertain my nonsense, but in my head he does. And I have this alternate universe version of him, like a mirror universe, you know, like Evil Spock, you know, where he has the beard. But like the mirror universe version of him, the only difference is he believes in my horoscopes. But anyway, I'm getting away from the point. The point is loss. My God. I had actually never read the book The Well of Loneliness before I met her, and she recommended it to me. And I kept saying, yeah, I'll get it. I bought it on Amazon, and it joined my very, very big pile of books that I keep saying I'll read and then don't. And when she was gone, I did. And I don't know why. I just felt like it was like a portal back to her. But it never could be, because she was gone. And sometimes that's just how it is. Sometimes people are just gone. And you can read what you want, and you can write songs and write poems and cry yourself to sleep for an entire summer, but that doesn't mean it's going to be different. You're listening to Alphabet Radio. Oh, Marlena, how you see into my soul. That goes out to all the people in love, all the people looking for love, and also all the people that have a really intense, deep hole in their heart where the European Union used to be. I feel you. Sometimes it's just very comforting to hear another European person, isn't it? I feel you. Next, we have some poetry from somebody that is mysterious and elusive, which are two of my favourite things to be personally, and that is October Falls. Their work is like an incantation. Maybe it should be left alone in the crypt unread. Reciting it out loud may only summon the demons that lurked in the writer's head. But where was that smart thinking when a virgin lit the black flame candle and their collection, thank God it's Friday the 13th, was unleashed on the world? And now, here on Diverse Verse, we have some of their latest work. I'll rise up from the ashes and be anew. A single fiery feather on the horizon. You only bruised my growing flesh. Bones remain unbroken despite your torment. My difference did nothing, but it seemed to offend you. Your society of ordinary in a grey tracksuit. Revenge is the expectation of a redemption story, but who really wins when both are hurting? True, I may still feel that prickle of heat. That sickening pit in my stomach, a wave of sweat on my forehead when I see you, unfazed of the pain you caused. I no longer wish harm, I no longer wish this war to go on. I forgive all. As like a phoenix, I will rise up from the ashes, from by the flames I burned in. Coming up next, we have an interview with someone that I was very excited to speak to, and I think you are going to be very excited to hear from, and that is Nicole Cyrus, who is an experimental filmmaker and spoken word poet. She has been writing poetry since her early teenage years, and she likes to mix the rhythmic formulations of the English language with a sense of magical realism to the emotive and everyday situations that unfold in her life. I think you're really going to love her, and coming up later, we've also got some of her poetry. So without further ado, this is When Jennifer Met Nicole. So, can you tell us a little bit about yourself and your work?
I really love films and poetry, and I actually, my day work is like freelance in film, but I've always written poems. So it's one of my major loves. And I kind of started reading Shakespeare when I was really young, simply because I just liked the rhythm of his words, which is kind of something I like to do a bit too much, I think, when I write poems. Kind of focus on like how the words roll off the tongue and if they roll into another one. And since then, I just, you know, read different compilations of poem books, and kind of just kept the love going from there. I kind of also like to try and mix the films I make, which are like experimental films, and put like some poetry in them, because I think that's quite interesting to see sort of the internal processes of what's going on with the characters in the film, as well as the sort of visual things that you're trying to convey in terms of the film. So that's really it, I guess. That's kind of the stuff I like to do, and that's kind of what I want to do in terms of the creative work I make.
Where do you find inspiration for your work?
Just stuff that I think makes me quite emotional. Sadly, I think, like, you know, when things go on in life, it's really easy to kind of hold them inside, and you spend so much time like trying to process it mentally, and sometimes like thinking about things isn't going to fix it. Sometimes you have to like feel things, and I feel like when you write poems, you're kind of knocking onto this really subconscious and internal process, which is like you're thinking about it, but you're also thinking about the feelings in this visual and emotive way. And most of the time when you write poems, you don't really know what comes out unless you finish it. Like there's sometimes I've written a poem and it's really quick, and it's kind of just like a burst of whatever's going on kind of in the past or something immediately and every day. But then sometimes it takes a while, like some poems take months, simply because there's like barriers, and then you kind of get through them and you realize actually what was going on was something much deeper and much complex and actually quite emotively distressing, which probably isn't the best way to see it, because poems are amazing, they shouldn't always be emotionally distressing. But I guess once you go through that, once I go through that, I kind of feel quite happy in a sort of really disastrous way, I guess, because whatever's happened has been quite emotive, or it's been emotive enough for me to want to write a poem about it. But at the same time, you've kind of turned it into something transformative and, I guess, beautiful. Like, if you can look back at it and find beauty in it, then it kind of feels okay.
Yeah. What's the most rewarding part of writing for you?
Sometimes if I write something and I really like the phrases that have come out, I find that quite exciting. I'm a bit of a nerd. I really like words. I really like words. So like if there's a really exciting word in a dictionary I've never found, I get really excited and quite inspired. So if I write something and a lot of the time like you don't feel so good about what you're writing, it takes space to come back to it and go, oh my god, like this is actually okay. But if I wrote something and then I sat down and I feel like, wow, like that actually encapsulates a lot of what I was trying to unearth that I didn't really know was coming about, but it's like really simple and it's just really about what it says to you as a reader, like what connotations it brings up for you. If I've done that and it also, I feel like it rolls off the tongue or it kind of ignites a deeper thought process or an emotional thought process, that's really rewarding for me because it's kind of like that's what poems are about.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of about what it says to you and what it does on the inside, and no one can really tell you what that is. Like the same poem to me might be completely different to someone else, and you'll take different parts from it and it will resonate to your life experiences in different ways, and I think that's really beautiful, and that's exactly why poems are so immense and also simplistic and really difficult at the same time.
Mm. So how do you feel that you as a person embody your writing?
Oh, not very well. not very well at all. I try and be someone that, like, if something happens and, you know, like, I try and be someone that takes chances,
mm-hmm.
or that kind of looks at myself and asks, you know, how do I feel about this, instead of thinking about what you should do or what's right. Like, you know, how do you feel? Like, are you in tune with yourself? Are you being authentic in your actions and your approach to other people? I try and do that a lot. I don't know if I'm so successful. I'm not going to lie about that. I hope I am, but obviously you make mistakes and things happen that can be upsetting or people misunderstand your intentions. So I try and do it, but I don't know if I've succeeded. I get anxious a lot as well, so that changes things sometimes. So I guess maybe just the intention to try. I hope the poems I write can be authentic. So I guess the same hope that I can do the same thing, I guess, is kind of good enough.
Yeah. How do you feel you've evolved over the years as a creator?
Quite a lot, I guess. I used to be really self-conscious about poems. I used to feel like if you wrote a poem and someone read it, they would like take a piece of you that you couldn't get back, which is so dramatic. And I used to be very precious, like I wouldn't let anyone see it, and I kind of would be very whimsical and very abstract because I didn't want to touch on too many things that are really real to my life,
mm-hmm.
because I felt like if I gave too many things that were real, I would lose something. But I've tried to stop doing that. Like now when I write, I kind of try to still have that whimsicalness because it gives things like an etherealness, and it makes you think about like everyday situations and objects in this really mystical way, but I also try and bring that more back to what's going on in my life, because I think it's important. Like when you write poems, like the intention to write a poem is you have to be emotional, like it is about the person's life, so you kind of have to give the art respect enough to give your life, and also maybe the people that might read it, is like it is quite a hard process to get comfortable to stand in front of people or to read it out to people, because it is kind of what's going on underneath. And I guess sometimes when you do that, you're kind of saying, like, you're kind of standing up to the world and like being ready to tell them who you are and being okay with that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's something that's progressed. There's something I've tried to do a lot differently in terms of the form of how I write.
So what's next for you in terms of projects or things that you're working on at the moment?
I still write stuff. There's a poem film project I'm trying to do, which is like, it's kind of like an art film where you take like you get a group of friends, you take them on a picnic, and then you get them to have 3 cameras and you get them to film parts of the picnic, but then you get them to come away and write like little poems about it. And then the plan was to put a film together, which was like an exploration and perception of like one event, but also using like the visuals and their own poems to make this sort of narrative that splashed between all three of their perceptions. I haven't done it yet, but it's something I've been writing and trying to get some people I know to do, because I think that'd be quite interesting. It would be quite like surreal but also realistic, because it's also like a documentary, but it's also edited in the form of how they wrote about that day, and each person will have a different perception, and the things they choose to film will be different as well. So you'll have like an overarching story, but also these individual stories that unfold within it. Yeah, stuff like that.
That sounds amazing. I love that.
Thanks.
So
will I get it done? For sure.
I know that feeling.
Yeah, it's a real feeling.
So where can our listeners find you if they want to find out more about your work?
I used to have a poem page, which was on Tumblr, but now I just use Instagram, and I just post like things, little poem things that I find. It's just Nicole R. Cyrus, that's really it. And everything else is from there, I guess, because it's visual, like you can, it reaches more people, I guess. You don't feel so precious about it, like when you post something.
Well, I have loved talking to you, and I personally, I can't wait for this film. It sounds really
amazing. Thank you.
And I'm sure that our listeners are very excited about it too. Thank you very much for coming on the show.
It's all right, thank you.
No problem.
For having me.
Up next is some poetry from Josie. I first saw Josie at a performance that we were both at in London, and I was absolutely floored by her work. It was beautiful. And then by chance, I saw her again at another show we were doing in London. And again, I was just in awe of her, and I'm really excited to get to share some of her work with you. We've got a couple of poems from her tonight, and this is the first.
Intersectionality. But what does it mean in reality? It should mean we're not alone. It's not a battle of one, but we should all duck at the sound of the gun. The bullets may not be fashioned from lead, and this time not aimed at your head, but once I'm dead, the sights are targeted at you instead. It should mean that your fight is my fight. Your rights are equal to my rights. And a label is a name to put on a box, but that's where it's you should stop. For we are a kaleidoscope, diamonds with beautiful facets. Though what you see depends on where you look, so don't forget to open the book. Non-binary, woman or man, whether trans or cis, a person of colour, biracial or a wonderful mix, gay, bi or straight, asexual or undecided yet, atheist, Jew, Muslim or any other faith or mindset, able or ill, disabilities, hidden or unseen, accident, self-inflicted or in our inherited genes, from a lifetime of struggle, you don't know where I've been, and neither do I know your journey, your starting point or stations in between. I will fight with you. Will you fight with me? I will stay with you, just like friends should do. I'll reach out, speak out, and shine a light in the dark. But when I stumble, will you pick me up? When no one believes, when the winning line is moved from view, I'm not giving up. If you will wait for me, I will wait for you. Let's make a pledge, a covenant, that whenever the world attacks, you look after me and I will have your back. I'll hold on to you and you hold on to me. We may sometimes flinch or hide, but together we'll make it to the other side. This is the reality of intersectionality.
That was Bjork with Play Dad, which is quite frankly one of the most beautiful songs I've ever heard. And before that we had Josie with her poem Intersectionality. One of the things that I found so interesting about Josie the first time I saw her perform was she introduced herself as the Polaroid poet. When she creates something, she doesn't edit, she doesn't change anything. And so you're receiving her raw emotions and feelings. And I think that's a really beautiful way of doing things. You're listening to Alphabet Radio. Now for some poetry from Nicole Cyrus.
Hovering heaters of trepidation subtract. Cigarette rave waveforms mystify quivering corridors, infect them with the uncertainty of our ego's borrowed reservations. The day's earlier quiet contemplations in my room reflect off my heart's failures that stagnate the stair tops we anchor ourselves on. She stares at me with aggravated anticipation, burrows her eyes with the worries and uncertainties that balloon themselves out of my intentional avoidance. Blackened walls contained its rainbow booth bars that echoed the journey between us. Measly meters marked by stoic placed isotopes projected by the people scattered in between. 3 feet wide planes of emotional stunted vacancy, frozen by the murmurs of her shrouded indignation. Past breezes of confusion that ended with my frightful confession to talk. My mind subsumes itself by the inevitability of my anxiety's complication. The apprehension in my chest cavity burns, charming the simplicity of a hastily leading up placid corridors. My feet perch on stair tops as her form blocks restrictive doorways, binded by the fear prevented from easy getaways. I addictively stammer through questions I couldn't lay to rest. Phrases I hid behind accusations of reading a book, poetry on the go, fragrant rhymes I regurgitated on its contents throughout the day, with wandering thoughts I thought I could safely confess to its pages. Now the vulnerabilities that steamed down on top of our candid corridor encounter hid the insecurities we both weren't ready to convey. She turns with astonishment, shock, exasperation, nose with disbelief to my anxious assertion, stares that give no answer, confusions that can't walk away. Her friends bloom nicotine bubbles of intrigue that births themselves under doors she hastily hushed away from, throwing phrases of reassurance, snarling we're just talking soliloquies against chipped door frames, mutters of concerns she won't let herself betray me with, expectations I can't bear myself to let fail. The outside world hovers shuddering as my confidence decays, with heat-stained nose tips, foreheads that welt by the restraint, nervous confessions I tell half-truths from, radiators hover over burning the silence into okays. Feelings my internal monologue repeats but won't give my heart the freedom to fully say. Withheld wants ricochet screeching sounds of intensifying war heaters. Subtracts laced by my subconsciousness is sponsored hesitations. Quiet seething breezes on us with ominous trepidations. Her eyes impregnated with expectations. She releases its fine to placate my cowardly reservations. Haunted by the depth of my feelings, I was afraid to confess. The disappointment behind, I'll see you soon, that leaves the leaves, that leaves the spaces in disarray. A lady that always tries to comfort my unrest, hovering over my muted feelings of unworthiness.
It was Pronouns Day, so this is called Nouns, Pronouns and Adjectives. He, she, it, shim, that, she, male, tranny, Tim, that's a trans-identified male. I can see your Adam's apple under your chin. Weirdo, pedo, trapper, that's in trapping males. Cocksucker, freak, dick girl, M in a D. That's a man in a dress when they shout at me. It's easy to say sir and he and him as a slur, but they them get stuck in their throat as they gloat, and God forbid when referring to me, they might deign to call me she. I'm not mixed up or a gender bender. Oh, and there's no such thing as a transgender, for it's an adjective and not a noun. So the indefinite article is grammatically wrong.
That was The Smith. You know, before Morrissey was a problematic mess, and the wonderful Josie with Nouns, Pronouns and Adjectives. And coming up next, we have some more poetry from Josie and also a little bit more from the wonderful October Falls. October's Eve, the cool air caressing my skin. A clock on the mantel is ticking, the near silence in the house comforting. Realization crosses my mind. I've never been alone, not truly. The ones dancing in the darkness with the eyes that glow like starlight, they are my friends. Advice from such creatures can seem poisoned and twisted, but who is to know you best? The demons you created. A heart's aching beat is their breathing. Ghost stories are traditional for bedtime, but what if your life is a ghost story in which you are the spectre, invisible to those around you, especially he you love true? When I said I loved you, I didn't tell a lie out loud. I told one to myself inside. The love I feel for you, I have to hide.
Who do you see? Talking is not the same as speaking. Listening is not the same as being heard, and looking is not the same as seeing, and existing is not the same as living. So who do you see when you look at me? For many, it's just the tranny. Can you see the person who ran into a house on fire to save a life, to be confronted by the arsonist armed with a knife? Or perhaps the person who chased the robber who had a gun and threatened to shoot? And so did I run? Yes, but in the same direction. And he was later caught, but a knobbled Old Bailey jury said we'd got the wrong one. Or perhaps I'm the one removing a child from her mum, well, to prevent even more harm being done. It could also be when I tried to stop a fight, a wife being beaten, but I ended up in hospital that night. Now, imagine the scene. The radio spouts. Shots fired, one dead, not known if the suspect's still on scene. And I'm only a minute away, and I think, is this my last call of the day? And I hear myself say, Sierra Alpha 81, I'm on my way. I once revived a child's life with mouth to mouth, but another died despite my best attempts on another night. Oh, this is not a boast. It's just simple facts of my existence, memories resurfacing from a distance. Can you do a please allow? That's jargon for a knock on a door, like your car has been found. Can you collect it from the pound? Or I have some bad news. Please sit down. I'm so sorry to say there's been an incident and your son has been stabbed. Tell me, how would you say he won't be coming home today? Have you held the hand of a man in a car, trapped by the steering wheel, asking, will I die? And answering, no need to fear, the ambulance will soon be here. And secretly thinking, God, I wish it would soon appear. And that is a snapshot, and not intended to shock, but a reminder that the shell you view may not be a clue to the person who hides behind their lived-in lives. So, who do you see? There's many like me who at 3 a.m. can't sleep and rerun from beginning to end decisions made because the memories don't fade. So now you can see just some of me, and you still don't know the half of it, though you will recognise, perhaps, 4 letters of the alphabet. Who do you see when you look at me? Is it visible, my darkened days and sleepless nights, my life-sapping, blood-sucking PTSD?
That was Trixie Mantel, or as her friends call her, Tracy, October and Josie, and we have more on the way. You're listening to Alphabet Radio. Completely. It's complicated. For a lifetime, it will grow and change. Delighting, disappointing. I just want something real. I just want something passionate. I'm not even sure if I even have a point. I don't have any more to say, because being vague is the only fun that's free in this grotesque but glorious world I woke up in. Completely. I hide behind a pillow, like a child full of fear as I get all I ever wanted, because I don't know what to do with it. And I don't know that I ever did. I just like to dream. I just like to imagine myself somewhere else. Sometimes I still do. Do you want to go to Lake Placid? Yes, I'm changing the subject. You know, so you won't dwell on my despair. I didn't mean to make you or I cry, but while we're here, let's plan a trip and promise we'll go, so I have something to hold on to. I prayed for it. Completely. Save me, love. Save me, fate. Save me, Father John Misty. I guess someone heard me. Completely. I don't have any more to say, because being vague is the only fun that's free in the grotesque but glorious world I woke up in. That was Burnt Norton, read by Lana Del Rey and written by T.S. Eliot. And then after that was a very helpfully titled poem I wrote called Being Vague to Own the Libs, but wait, I am the libs. And then with like a really distressed looking emoji thing. By the way, I think I speak for all of us when I say, sis, where is Violet? Where is she? When is she getting released? Give us the details. Give us the pre-order link. We'd like to see it. I think we would. I'm hoping and praying to the god of poetry, Caroline Duffy, that this is not going to be a Norman situation where she's like, it's coming, and then it takes forever to come out. Let's all have a prayer circle that we will not be waiting much longer. Unfortunately, our time together is coming to a close, but we will be back together soon, I'm sure. And there is a whole evening of beautiful content on its way to you from the rest of the team at Alphabet Radio. So grab some drinks, grab some snacks, settle in, get ready. You're going to love it. I would like to thank the wonderful contributors I had on tonight's show. Thank you to Nicole Cyrus. If you'd like to find out a bit more about her, you can follow her on Instagram with the username Nicole R. Cyrus. Thank you to Josie. You can find her on Twitter with the username Two Sides of a Coin. And thank you to October. You can find them on Instagram with the username Here Lies October Falls. And thank you to you for listening to this show. I will see you soon.
You've been listening to Diverse Verse on Alphabet Radio with me, Jennifer Watt. I hope to see you next